and ask our Brother David Pearce to come forward and give us words of exhortation. Brother David, please.
My dear brothers and sisters, you may have noticed from various surreptitious bangs and pops in the darkness and the displays in the supermarkets that very soon it will be Guy Fawkes Night. Perhaps some of us look forward with our children or grandchildren to glowing bonfires and hot potatoes and crackling fireworks. But actually, it wasn't Guy Fawkes who was behind the gunpowder plot. He was only the fool guy who was arrested underneath the House of Lords with the slow match that was about to set off the explosion. The real head of the conspirators was Robert Catesby. And not many people outside this area know that he actually lived in the manor house at Ashley St. Ledger's, which is between Rugby and Daventry, where much of the planning for the assassination of the King James took place. You see, the situation was, when Elizabeth I died, she had no heir. And so Robert Cecil, who was Secretary of State at that time, arranged for James VI of Scotland to come down and be James I of England, the same James that made the James King James Version Bible. Now, Elizabeth, in her reign, had been pretty strongly anti-Catholic. And when James came down to England, the Catholic families of England hoped that the new king would favour them and restore their fortunes. But he started his reign by denouncing Catholicism. And actually, on the 24th of April 1604, he proposed, kings could in those days, a bill in Parliament which threatened every Catholic in the country. So, Robert Catesby, who was a very staunch Catholic, called together a conspiracy to kill the king by exploding gunpowder under the Houses of Parliament during its opening session. And Guy Fawkes, who was an expert in explosives, was called in to plan the detonation part of it. And afterwards, assuming the plot was successful, the king's daughter, who lived in Coombe Abbey at Coventry, was going to be made queen. And because she would have to have a regent to rule the country over her, he would be Catholic and everything would go their way. So 36 barrels of gunpowder were smuggled into an undercroft under the Houses of Parliament, Houses of Lords actually, and concealed under huge piles of firewood. And unfortunately for the conspirators, there were many delays to the opening of Parliament that particular year because of the plague. And so they had to keep on putting it off. But when the day eventually came close and it was all agreed, the wives of some of the conspirators feared that some of their Catholic friends would be present in the House of Lords and killed. So an anonymous letter warned Francis Tresham, warned Francis Tresham's brother-in-law not to attend. And he became suspicious about this letter and passed the letter to Robert Cecil. So they searched the House of Lords and found nothing. And then the king said, go back and have another search. So they had another search and they found underneath his huge piles of firewood, there were these barrels of gunpowder with Guy Fawkes himself standing by, waiting to set off the explosion next morning. And the conspirators were all waiting for news from London in what today is called Guy Fawkes House at Dunchurch, and just down the road. Handy there to get hold of the princess at Coombe Abbey, you see. And when they learned the plot had failed, they all had to scatter, and all of them were either killed or executed. Well, you say, Brother David, what's this got to do with an exhortation? Well, it shows us, doesn't it, that though humans may think they can frustrate them, God's plans will always prevail. And by such slender circumstances as the sending of a private letter, a change of government was prevented in this country that would have delayed the publication of King James's Bible at least for many years, because the Catholics, you know, didn't want ordinary people to be able to read the scriptures. And it was only at midnight, after a second and more thorough search, that these barrels of gunpowder were uncovered. That is, ensured that James survived And of course, he then became even more determined to issue a Bible that could be read by everybody. I mean, can you imagine, can't we, the angels of the Lord working behind the scenes to ensure that God's plans proceeded unchecked? Just as, of course, they do today, as Mrs. May tries to prise Britain away from Catholic Europe. Well, let's look at another conspiracy in the Bible, where the plotters were successful. And the ruler really was dethroned. And we're going back about 800 BC, a time when the people of Judah were struggling under the rule of wicked Queen Athaliah. Who, you remember, it was in our Bible readings during the week. Athaliah had seized the throne of Judah when her son had been killed. And so the kingdom should have passed. The kingdom should have passed to his eldest son. But this evil woman arranged for all his children to be slaughtered, so that she herself could proclaim queen. And once in power, she held the kingdom of Judah in an iron grip. Because her background herself was a daughter of Jezebel, wife of Ahab, king of Israel, she insisted on the worship of Baal. A bit like Catholicism versus Protestant. She insisted on the worship of Baal. Indeed, her own sons, we read in the week, who were brothers of the dead Ahaziah, raided the temple to take away the precious things of God to dedicate to Baal. Athaliah continued in power for 6 years, and things were looking pretty grim for people like us who worship the Lord. But one brave man rose to the occasion. He had a secret. Unknown to Queen Athaliah, when the slaughterers were going through the palace, the sister of the dead Ahaziah had snatched up Joash, the king's youngest son, who was only a few months old, and hid him, and his nurse actually, from the slaughterers. And for the last 6 years, this little baby had grown up hidden somewhere in the temple. So there was a living heir to the throne that nobody knew about, but he was only a tiny little boy. Now this amazing old man was Jehoiada. Let's see what we can find out about him. Let's go to 2 Chronicles, please, chapter 24. 2 Chronicles 24, it's yesterday's reading. And verse 15. Okay. Jehoiada waxed old and was full of days when he died. Here it is. 130 years old was he when he died. And they buried him with the kings of Judah. Now, if he was 130 years old when he died, and that's partway through the reign of Joash, it must have been around about 825 BC. Now, if you go back 130 years from there, backwards, you'd end up about 955 BC. That's early in the reign of King Solomon. He was born when the temple was brand new, was being built. So Jehoiada had lived through the division of the kingdom when Solomon died. He'd seen Rehoboam come and go, he'd seen Abijam come and go, he'd seen Asa come and go, he'd seen Jehoshaphat come and go. He witnessed the dreadful error of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, in marrying his son Ahaziah to the daughter of Jezebel, queen of Israel, and the effects that had on the kingdom of Judah, which we've just seen. So he's now over 100 years old, and he's the only man who can carry the respect of the worshippers of the Lord. Now for another surprise. He'd married the daughter of the dead King Ahaziah. So it was his own brave wife who actually saved her nephew from destruction. Chapter 22 and verse 11. 22 verse 11. Jehoshabeath, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons that were slain, and put him and his nurse in a bedchamber. Some verses put a wardrobe. Hid him in a wardrobe. So Jehoshabeath, trying to twist it, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, hid him from Athaliah, so that she stood him up. So she's the wife of Jehoiada, the old man, that's his second wife. And she's the daughter of King Joram. So, somehow, Jehoiada and his wife kept this little baby alive for 6 years, somewhere tucked away inside the temple, only a stone's throw from Athaliah's palace. Imagine, every day their secret could have been discovered. And their lives, of course, would then be forfeit, wouldn't they? And with the execution of little Joash, the royal line of descent from David would have been severed. We have a sister today in Ukraine, in Kiev actually, who was of Jewish descent and survived all the last war as a little girl, hidden in the cellar underneath her parents' house in Kiev, hidden from the Germans. Same sort of situation. Every day their secret could have been discovered. But under God's good hand, they weren't. Imagine they must have had the job to sleep every night thinking about that knock on the door outside that would reveal the fact that Athaliah had discovered them. What a terrible life that would have been to live all those 6 years. But eventually Jehoiada decided the time was right to overthrow Athaliah. So he's now prepared, like those conspirators over there in Aspis and Ledgers, he's now prepared to risk his life to kill Athaliah and restore the worship of the Lord, not the worship of Baal. So he calls together, like those conspirators over there, a secret conference of army officers to start the rebellion. You have to have the army behind you if you want to get anywhere nowadays. It certainly was true in those days. And every one of these men was sworn to secrecy, just like the gunpowder plot. Have a look, 2 Chronicles 23, verse 1. In the seventh year of this little boy, Jehoiada strengthened himself, and he took the captains of hundreds, here's the army, and they went about in Judah, verse 2, and gathered the Levites out of all the cities, and they came to Jerusalem for this secret conference. And all the congregation gathered there, verse 3, made a covenant with the king in the house of God, the king, the boy Joash. And he said unto them, behold, the king's, this is Jehoiada speaking, behold, the king's son shall reign, as the Lord hath said of the sons of David. This is the thing you shall do. And he gives them instructions now. This group of conspirators, that's exactly what they're going to do. They fix a Sabbath day for the rebellion. A Sabbath day because it was a changeover day in the temple, when there would be two lots of priests, one going out on the Sabbath, having finished their week's duty, and another lot coming in. A bit like Zechariah in Luke chapter 1. So, Jehoiada, of course, had access to the national store of armaments, which were kept in the temple, remember, from the time of Solomon onwards. So he issues the weapons and arranges bodyguards for the new king, and he sets the plan in motion. Well, the rest, as they say, is history. Little Joash was crowned, people cheered, Athaliah came running into the temple, but minutes later she was dead. And now Jehoiada led the people in the destruction of those hateful altars to Baal, and they entered into a solemn covenant that they would all keep the law of Moses, which they did for the rest of Jehoiada's days. So, Catesby's gunpowder plot to restore Catholicism failed, and we celebrate the fact with our bonfires. But Jehoiada's plot to restore the worship of the Lord succeeded, and he goes down in Bible history as a great man of faith, even buried him with the kings. What a great example we have in this steadfast old man, determined to restore the worship of the Lord, prepared to wait 6 years until that plan had some chance of success. You couldn't crown the boy when he's only two or three, he had to wait till at least he's six. And just as brave as Jehoiada was his wife, surely. Jehoshabeath, that's right. When the soldiers came through the palace to kill the young children of the king, it was she who snatched up the youngest one and hid him and his nurse. Imagine the risk of being caught. It's like Rahab with the spies upon her roof. Or Moses' parents in Egypt with the decree of Pharaoh with another little baby Moses. If little Joash had started to howl, she was doomed. In fact, it rather reads as though the saving of Joash was her idea, doesn't it? The way it comes in that reading there. It was her idea. And she told them, when the soldiers had gone away, she told Jehoiada what she'd done, and they then decided between them they must try to save the life of the heir to the throne, the seed of David. So it's our sister, Jehoshabeath, who deserves at least half the glory in this story of the rebellion. The whole thing underlies the fact, doesn't it? An important point, really. It underlies the fact that a crisis can come upon us in a matter of minutes when we have to decide what to do. Do we trust in God and take a risk? Or do we keep our head down like Peter when he was accused of being a follower of Jesus? Do you admit to being a Christadelphian when people say to you, what do you do on Sundays? Jesus said, if we confess him before men, he will confess us before the holy angels at the last day, doesn't he? Well, we've come together this morning to remember Jesus, of course. And thankfully, we can do so in this country without fear. There's no Ataliah out there, at least not at the moment, not yet. And Jesus, our master, came face to face with the religious leaders of his day who condemned him to death. He condemned them in public because they turned the worship of God, he said, into an empty ritual. You leave the commandment of God, he says, and hold to the tradition of men. That's his words. And we see the same process going on out there today, don't we? Exactly the same process. People are turning God's commandments away and replacing them with the commandments and the traditions of men, the preferred morals of our society, as our brother mentioned in his own earlier prayer. When Jesus stood up against this process that was going on, he made enemies. And like Robert Catesby, they decided to kill him, to shut him up. It is better for one man to die, said Caiaphas, to save the nation. That's what they argued. And so secretly, night after night, like Caiaphas' gang, the rulers of the Jews met together to plot the death of Jesus. And they succeeded. Of course, it was part of God's great plan that his son should suffer unjustly under the hand of evil men. And his enemies rejoiced when they had his body locked into a tomb. And his disciples wept, especially Peter, who left it too late to ask for Jesus' forgiveness. But of course, on the third day, the King of Israel, executed on the cross, suddenly appeared like Joash, alive and well, to the consternation of the conspirators and the joy of his followers. Exactly as he told them, and we read about it in John's Gospel a couple of days ago. Truly, truly, I say to you, you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice, and you will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will turn into joy. And no one will take your joy from you. Those are the words of Jesus. And we too can rejoice, can't we, this morning? We can rejoice that God has given us the victory over our enemies and set us free from the power of the grave. That royal line of David survived intact and in God's good time. Jesus the King will come again to the acclamation of his people to put down all God's enemies and to reign on the throne of David forever.